Support for WPR comes from Viterbo University. Offering 1 to 2 year master's degree programs in business administration, healthcare leadership, and servant leadership. Viterbo.edu/graduate. Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
Did Lee Harvey Oswald act alone in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy? And why are we still asking that question 50 years after the assassination? Do you believe the Warren Commission's findings that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone? And if not, why not? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, November 22nd. Today is the 50th anniversary of that tragic day in Dallas, Texas. And with it comes another wave of conspiracy theories. We will talk with a guest professor from Marquette University who has spent much of his academic career debunking Kennedy assassination conspiracy theories. And we will welcome your questions and perhaps your skepticism for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is John McAdams, an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. He is the author of JFK Assassination Logic, How to Think About Claims of Conspiracy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you back on the show. We've talked with you about this subject when your book came out. I was surprised to see, but you were the subject of a recent piece in Time magazine. It was The Debunker Among the Buffs. So you are one of the you are nationally known for your debunking of conspiracy theories for the Kennedy assassination.
I guess so. I sometimes get mentioned on the internet within the same sentence as Gerald Posner and Vince Bugliosi, which is very flattering. Because, in fact, I think they have been the chief debunkers of the last couple of decades. But I suppose I would be the chief debunker that's on the internet. Gerald Posner has an internet site, but he's not terribly active there. Vince Bugliosi doesn't even do the internet. He doesn't even do email. If you want to reach him, you have to email his secretary. I guess I'm the internet debunker as opposed to the print media debunker.
How did that happen? Why did you spend much of the last 20 years debunking these conspiracy theories?
Well, I got interested in it in the early 1990s. The movie JFK came out. I got involved in an internet discussion on the assassination, and I found out that there were simply a lot of silly factoids out there. Things people were saying that just weren't true. So someone would make an assertion, and then I would decide, okay, I'm going to run that down. For a while, I actually had all 26 volumes of the Warren Commission exhibits in my bookshelf right next to me. Now that's unnecessary because that's all on the internet. And in case after case, I found out that people were making statements that were just flatly untrue, or perhaps misleading because something had been taken out of context. And every time I'd find out something like that and document it, I'd do a little web page or a little just even text file and put it live on the internet. Eventually, those accumulated to the point where I decided I'll put an HTML, that is web page front end, on it and make it a website, which I did. And it sort of like topsy, it just growed.
Yeah. So why do you suppose 50 years after the assassination, Professor McAdams, these conspiracy theories still abound? And for that matter, I saw in that Time article, some poll showed only 10% of the American public during this particular period thought that that Oswald acted alone.
I think it's probably more than 10%, although it's a minority, I'm sure. You're asking me, first of all, you're asking me a question about social psychology, just to be clear on that. And yes, I can do social psychology. I think it's that people want to believe that important events have important causes. And the Kennedy assassination was an important event. I think less because of its objective historical significance than because of its psychological significance. First of all, the Kennedy administration was very glamorous. People had a sort of a emotional connection to Kennedy, John Kennedy, and to Jackie, and their kids, their very cute kids in the White House, for example. A baby boom generation was just coming of age at that time. And it's also the case that in 1963, people believed that the president never got assassinated. Now, that's because Garfield and McKinley were ancient history. I mean, that was a different America. We didn't think that happened anymore. Lincoln was even more ancient history. So it shocked people. Now, given the very large psychological significance of it, I think there's a dynamic of human psychology. We want to believe that large effects must have large causes. Quoting William Manchester here, if you put the Kennedy, John Kennedy on one side of a scale and that wretched waif Lee Oswald on the other, a nobody who happened to work as a warehouse clerk and happened to have a rifle, they don't seem to balance. So you want something on the other side more weighty than Lee Harvey Oswald. And, of course, the CIA would do it. Fidel Castro would do it. Lyndon Johnson would do it. The mafia would do it. But put Lee Oswald on the other side, and it just doesn't seem to balance. Now, in the real world, terribly important effects can have trivial causes. Consider the slaughter that was World War I. That happened because Archduke Ferdinand's driver took a wrong turn and drove him in front of a would-be assassin who'd sort of given up and thought he'd lost his opportunity. And here comes the vehicle with the Archduke and his wife right down the street. And bam, bam, all of a sudden you have, well, your listeners all know what happened there. So in the real world, trivial, accidental causes do have very large effects, but people want to endow events like that with a much broader meaning.
You mentioned that this had a tremendous psychological effect on us, but not so much historical significance. Did I understand you to say that?
Yeah, a lot of people were in thrall of Camelot. And believe that, gosh, everything would have gone well in America if Kennedy hadn't been assassinated. That's not clear at all. For example, they like to believe that Kennedy would have never gotten embroiled in Vietnam. Maybe he wouldn't have, but we don't know that. Before he died, his public statements were pretty clear that it was important that communists not be allowed to take over in South Vietnam. In fact, one speech he'd already given on the day of his assassination, and another speech he was scheduled to give in Austin, he didn't make it to Austin to give the speech, made it clear that, he said, we dare not shirk our duty. We dare not withdraw from our attempts to contain the spread of communism. And he particularly said Southeast Asia. So is it possible he would have avoided getting embroiled in Vietnam? That's possible, but we don't know. And a lot of the turmoil of the 60s, if you try to explain it, it didn't have that much to do with whether Kennedy was president or not. Part of it was a baby boom generation that came of age and constituted critical mass in colleges and universities. So you get left-wing activism and you get a countercultural movement. The civil rights movement sort of went sour. From Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech in 1963, by the late 60s you had, black militants. People like Eldridge Cleaver, for example, who thought that you could strike a great blow for racial fairness if black men raped white women. Cleaver actually said that, so things seemed to go sour. It's not at all clear that they would not have gone sour had John Kennedy been president. Kennedy is remembered as a great hero of civil rights. And yes, by the time he died, he was supporting the cause of civil rights with glowing rhetoric. And indeed, in his Texas trip, he supported civil rights with glowing rhetoric. But he'd been kind of slow getting behind the issue. Some of your older listeners might remember something called Freedom Riders, racially integrated groups of bus riders who rode through the South into facilities where segregation was the law. It was a form of civil disobedience. Yeah. Kennedy told one of his staffers when that was happening, he asked them, "Can't you get these people off the buses?" That was not because Kennedy was opposed to civil rights. That was because other things were higher up, you know, on his agenda. And you can actually make a very good case that his assassination was a boon to civil rights, at least in the short run, because it helped pass the 64 Civil Rights Act. Mm-hmm. That could be viewed as part of the legacy of a martyred president. Would it have passed if Kennedy had been around? We don't know. Perhaps so, but his assassination was actually a boon to passing the 64 Civil Rights Act.
We are talking with John McAdams, an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, author of JFK Assassination Logic, How to Think About Claims of Conspiracy. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions on this, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And we are discussing this hour why, after 50 years, there are still many people in this country who do not believe that do not believe in the findings of the Warren Commission, that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with John McAdams, an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, and someone who has spent the last 20 years debunking the claims of conspiracy. And we wonder what you think, what questions you have for him. Duane in Hayward is with us. Hello, Duane.
Good morning. I think the biggest problem is when they closed the complete Warren Commission files off and they didn't let anybody see them. And that fueled the conspiracy theorists out there.
Professor McAdams?
I think when you keep files secret, that does fuel conspiracy theories. Some files clearly should be kept secret. Those that reveal sources and methods in American intelligence, for example, chronically government bureaucracies over-classify stuff. Chronically, they tend to keep stuff classified that there's no good reason to classify. There was a huge declassification of documents in the 1990s. Just by page count, probably 99% of all the documents have been declassified. There are about 1,100, near 1,200 documents that have not been declassified. All the rest have. A lot of the stuff that was declassified in the 1990s clearly should not have been classified to begin with. Some of it consisted of things, for example, like clippings from the popular press that one CIA office, say the CIA's division in New Orleans, would clip and send to CIA's national headquarters in Langley, Virginia. Clippings from the popular press. How did this get kept secret? And the answer is there was no good reason. Bureaucrats tend to, with a very broad brush, classify huge masses of material. It's sort of a form of bureaucratic risk aversion. But I think you're right that that fuels conspiracy theories. I, as a political scientist, don't automatically assume that when bureaucracies overclassify stuff, they're hiding something sinister, because we've had so much stuff declassified, particularly in the 1990s, that wasn't sinister. Bureaucracies tend to be risk-averse. They also tend to resist certain tasks that they are not keen about. And declassifying documents, I can assure you, is something that neither the FBI nor the CIA just wants to bother with. It's just a bother and a distraction to them. So you get the phenomenon of stuff classified that shouldn't be.
Nancy emails, I watched the PBS program on the forensics, which support the lone gunman. What evidence is there that Oswald was alone in planning the assassination? I am curious, since the man who could have revealed was killed himself before he could be fully investigated and tried.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there are two issues here. One, that Oswald shoot Kennedy. The forensic, particularly ballistic evidence on that, is overwhelming. Another issue which the person writing raises is, did Oswald have help, or was he part of a conspiracy? It's very difficult to prove a negative. Sometimes, though, absence of evidence really is evidence of absence, if you're following me. If you keep in mind that this thing has been investigated for 50 years, a lot of the investigators have been conspiracy theorists, people who would have loved to have found hard, solid evidence of conspiracy. It's been the holy grail for a lot of people for five decades, and nothing solid has turned up. So after a while, we are entitled to conclude, well, if there was anything really indicating a conspiracy, it probably would have turned up. That kind of argument can never be 100%, but it can be, well, something like 99. I mean, why do most of your listeners not believe in Bigfoot? If they don't, hey, that's accepting a negative too, isn't it? But we might know that if there's any such creature, there has to be a certain population. Otherwise, the species goes extinct. And there have been enough people in the northwest woods of the United States with cameras, for example, that by now there really ought to be a picture of that creature. So I do think here the absence of evidence really is fairly strong evidence of absence, that if there was any at least substantial conspiracy, we should know about it. Now,
wasn't there a file that Lee Harvey Oswald had, a CIA file gathered on him because of his, I don't know, his travel?
Sure. When he defected to the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
In 1959, the State Department created some documents that got passed on to the CIA. Then he wanted to return to the U.S., which he did. And when he returned to the U.S., the FBI interviewed him. Those documents went into his CIA file. Then in September of 1963, he went to Mexico City to try to get a visa to get into Cuba. And, of course, the CIA station in Mexico City was surveilling the Cuban and Russian embassies where Oswald went, and that created a fairly extensive document trail. So, yeah, the CIA had a file on Oswald.
Yeah, so some were
had files on thousands of people during the Cold War.
And some of the theorists say, well, the CIA influenced Oswald to assassinate the president because the president wanted to disband the CIA.
Well, the claim that first of all, there's really no evidence of that. There is a claim from an anonymous source in the New York Times in the early 1960s that does quote Kennedy saying, I'm going to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. This was in the wake of the Bay of Pigs fiasco. Mm. In that same New York Times article, which they explain was part of an extensive project that a lot of reporters participated in, the New York Times journalist said that, in fact, the CIA was under fairly tight civilian control by elected civilian officials. It's also the case that Bay of Pigs was in 1961. The assassination was in November 1963. If Kennedy was going to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces, he took his time doing it because 2 years plus is forever in Washington, D.C.
Let's take another.
It's also the... Go ahead.
I was going to say we have a news break coming up, and we have a lot of callers waiting. So why don't I bring Joe in Princeton on? Hi, Joe.
Okay.
Good morning. I have 2 points I want to make. Number one, and I've been following this for 50 years, there was a woman in a red coat standing on Dealey Plaza. She was like 20 feet away from Kennedy when she was shot. She was never interviewed by the Warren Commission, although she was on TV like minutes after that. And she insists it was 4 to 6 shots she heard. Plus, she thought she saw a gun from the grassy knoll. And that's never really been, and the cops ran that way, and a lot of people ran that way. And so that's my first one, and I wish you would address that, and then now I'm losing my other one.
Yeah, I know what the other one is, and we don't have time. I'm sorry, I didn't realize there was going to be a couple of different points here. A woman in a red dress who thought she heard more shots.
Yeah, her name was Jean Hill. Later in the 1980s, she said she saw a grassy knoll gunman. But within less than an hour after the assassination, an interviewer for WBAP-TV Fort Worth got her interview along with her friend Mary Moorman. He asked her point blank, "Did you see a shooter?" And she said, "No, I didn't see any shooter." And he said, "You only heard?" And she said, "I only heard." So her claim to have seen a shooter only surfaced in the 1980s. She said something diametrically opposite in 1963, within about an hour of the assassination.
We'll pick up on this point after we check news. We are talking about the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination with John McAdams from Marquette University. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a Marquette University political scientist, John McAdams, who has spent the past 20 years or so researching and debunking conspiracy theories regarding John F. Kennedy's assassination. And we are welcoming your questions and maybe your challenges for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Friday, November the 22nd, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. John McAdams is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University and the author of JFK Assassination Logic, How to Think About Claims of Conspiracy. And Professor McAdams, you also have a website that essentially goes through all the different conspiracy theories and debunks them one by one. I posted that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, but I don't have it in front of me. What is that website?
Well, the simple way is jfkassassination.net.
Okay.
There's another Marquette URL that gets there, too, but the simple one is jfkassassination.net.
Yeah, and how do you react, Professor McAdams, to some of the skeptics who, boy, I saw one that there's a website that said John McAdams is a CIA agent. People think that you're being paid off by the CIA to, what's going on?
Well, these people are flattering themselves. That's only a fringe among conspiracists. Typically, they tend to be Jim Garrison supporters, and Jim Garrison supporters are a little bit of a fringe group. They're really flattering themselves to think that the CIA actually cares very much about them. Even if the CIA did kill Kennedy, probably nobody in the agency now actually knows it. I wouldn't be surprised if there are some people in the CIA who believe that a conspiracy killed Kennedy because they've read a conspiracy book of one kind or another. So they really think that the government is obsessed with a continuing cover-up of an assassination conspiracy, even 50 years after the fact, when anybody who would have conspired is probably long since dead.
Well, you just mentioned even if the CIA killed him, I mean, what your conclusion is that the Warren Commission was completely correct, or what is your?
Well, what do you mean by completely?
Well, you have doubts yourself.
No, in general, I think they were correct that Oswald didn't. It was by himself. Now, there are all kind of ways you can pick at the Warren Commission around the edges. For example, their handling of the medical evidence wasn't very good. And the reason for that is they tentatively tried to get the autopsy photos and x-rays. They ran into some resistance from Bobby Kennedy, and then they backed off. That was a mistake on their part. So if you mean completely correct, I mean, do you mean in every detail? No. But in essence, were they right? Yeah.
The conclusion that Oswald acted alone and without outside influence.
Correct.
Yeah. Let's take some more calls, and we have many of them. Gene in Madison. Hi, Gene.
Yes. There are three things I'd like to say. First, and these I believe are facts. First, we have a gun that the FBI tried to fire three shots off in the allotted time and never was able to do it. Secondly, those autopsy photos, they could settle all sorts of arguments as to where the entrance and exit wounds were. And finally, the thing that blows the professor out of the water is the trial of Clay Shaw in 67, where the Zapruder film was shown, and anybody who's been in the military or anybody who's used weapons understands what they saw, not what this nice professor is saying. And I will take my comments off the air.
Well, Gene, are you referring to the Kennedy's head going backwards when he was shot from behind?
Well, have you ever fired any guns at anything?
Well, I was asking what specifically from the Zapruder film blows the professor out of the water.
Namely, it sure as hell looks like when you look at that Zapruder film, and this is why you have 50 years of controversy. Once the Zapruder film was subpoenaed at a trial and it was shown, all of a sudden we've had 46 years worth of chit-chat as to whether or not a commission might lie to the American people. And I'm not talking about any conspiracies. I'm talking about what people can see, and you on a jury, Joy, would have to make your own decision as to what you saw.
Well, Gene, don't get mad at me. I'm just asking you what it is that you saw that was so convincing. But that's what I'm assuming it is. People saw his head snap back when he was shot in the back of the head. Why? What about that, Professor McAdams?
Sure. Number one, bullets don't throw people around. That's what standard forensics literature says. And interestingly, there's a fascinating Mythbusters episode titled Blown Away, where they debunk what they call Hollywood ballistics, which is the idea that bullets can throw people bodily around. When you see that in a movie, there's a wire attached to the stunt guy who is being jerked violently backward when he's shot. People can get that Mythbusters episode on Amazon.
What is the forensics explanation as to why his head jerked back?
I think the most likely thing is a neuromuscular spasm. Essentially, the bullet destroyed his brain in about a millisecond, causing the muscles to spasm. The strong muscles in the back predominated, causing him to jerk back into the left. The House Select Committee on Assassinations, and this video is on my website, actually looked at slow motion footage of a goat being shot in the head. The goat's legs splayed outward. The back legs kicked upward as the stronger back muscles contracted, and causing a neuromuscular spasm. I think that's the best guess. The medical evidence from the photos and x-rays, which were available to the House Select Committee on Assassinations, were available to the Ramsey Clark panel in 1968, were available to the Rockefeller Commission in 1975, all of those commissions consisted of top forensics pathologists, clearly show a shot hit Kennedy in the head from behind. So, I mean, that is the reliable evidence, the autopsy photos and x-rays.
Yeah.
As for the rifle, mm-hmm. when it was tested by three shooters in various sort of recreation, they fired 18 shots, and 13 landed in a head and shoulders silhouette, two-thirds. Oswald supposedly hit two out of his three shots, so that's in about the same neighborhood.
What was the explanation for why our caller before news said that, you know, police went running toward the grassy knoll? Was that because of just sound reverberation or what?
A fair number of witnesses thought there were shots from the grassy knoll. A substantially larger number thought the shots came from the depository. Interestingly, very few witnesses thought the shots came from two directions. If you look at the films of Dealey Plaza, both still and movie, in the wake of the assassination, nobody is initially running to the grassy knoll. An officer named Clyde Haygood, who was well back in the motorcade, not even in Dealey Plaza at the time of the shooting, went down Houston Street, left on Elm, and a woman told him, quote, unquote, they're shooting at the president from the bushes. He parked his motor in Elm Street and then ran up the grassy slope. He ran up to the corner of the stockade fence and the triple underpass, and people saw him running up and inferred, well, he must be running after a shooter, and ran after him. It's several seconds before anybody runs in the direction of the stockade fence. What they first do is you can see them running down Elm in the direction of the retreating limo, as though they want to see what they can see about what's happening in the limo. But the people who run up there are following Officer Clyde Haygood.
John in Rhinelander is with us now. Hi, John.
Hi. Interesting controversy. I do know for a fact that JFK and Sam Giancana, who's the mob boss from Chicago at the time, were having sex with Marilyn Monroe. I do know that. And how could he be, my question is, how could they censor the autopsy, and how could he be hit for the front of the head and the back of the head? When he got hit from the front of the head, it blew out one-third of his brain that Jackie Kennedy was trying to put back on the, in the limousine.
Well, that's getting kind of graphic.
A bullet hit him in the back of the head in the cowlick area and shattered with one large fragment exiting at the coronal suture, sort of that's in front of the ear. You can see that the beveling from that exit in one of the now publicly released, although not in great copies, autopsy photos. When a bullet hits flesh, it creates a pressure cavity. I think you can easily find on YouTube footage of bullets hitting ballistic gelatin. It causes a pressure cavity. And what actually happened is that bullet, which had to lose a lot of kinetic energy into Kennedy's brain, created a pressure cavity, which literally blew Kennedy's head apart. The large defect was from the cowlick area forward to the coronal suture, blowing out a large part of the right side of the brain.
Yeah. So, what about the mob boss connection here? Did the mafia do this?
Well, I don't. If you want me to talk, I could talk a while about mafia theories, but I don't know if both those. Well, I think John Kennedy probably had sex with Marilyn Monroe. I don't know about Giancana. If so, I don't think it has anything much to do with the assassination. Then there's a woman named Judith Exner who gets drawn in there too. So there were all kinds of salacious things going on. The challenge I see is showing that they had anything significant to do with the assassination.
We are talking with John McAdams, an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, author of JFK Assassination Logic: How to Think About Claims of Conspiracy. Professor McAdams has spent a couple of decades researching various conspiracy theories regarding JFK's assassination and debunking those conspiracy theories. We welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Mm-hmm. I'm Joy Curdine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes before 8 on this Friday, November 22nd, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And we are talking with John McAdams, who is the author of JFK Assassination Logic, How to Think About Claims of Conspiracy, and welcoming your questions and maybe your claims at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Curdine Show Facebook page. Joy in Madison is with us. Hello, Joy.
Hi. I don't claim to be a conspiracy buff at all, but over the years I've read many interesting articles about the whole situation. A couple things I'd like you to address, Professor. One is the number of witnesses who have died unusual deaths, all out of proportion to a random segment of the population. And secondly, I thought I read recently that it's probably one of those commissions that you mentioned very briefly. There was a reconsideration of the Warren Commission, in the 70s, I believe, and they concluded that there was probable cause for thinking that there was a conspiracy.
The so-called mysterious death. You get a list of maybe 100 people, 100 or so people who were supposedly connected with the assassination, who quote unquote died mysteriously. Most of those people, their connection with the assassination was absurdly tenuous. It'll be somebody who worked with the FBI, but actually didn't have any particular connection with the JFK investigation. Like the mayor of New Orleans is on the list. Well, how is the mayor of New Orleans connected to the assassination? Well, Lee Harvey Oswald lived in New Orleans. Interestingly, the mayor of Fort Worth is not on the list, although he lived in Fort Worth. So basically, what people are doing is compiling a list of deaths of people who had the most questionable and tenuous supposed connection with the assassination. Often, no connection with the assassination whatsoever has been shown. It's just that conspiracists think there was. For example, there's several mafia people on the list. Well, did the mafia actually have any connection with JFK's assassination? Conspiracists think they did, but the inclusion of those mafia people proves nothing unless they really, really did. So you get about 100 deaths listed out of what must be a population of 10 or 20,000 people who had some extraordinarily tenuous and distant connection with the assassination. By the way, if you look at most of those deaths, they were simply not mysterious at all. Somebody died of a heart attack, or somebody was killed in a bar brawl, having nothing to do with the assassination.
Mm-hmm. What about this? Was there a reconsideration of the Warren Commission report that concluded there was reason to doubt?
Yeah, what she's talking about is the House Select Committee on Assassinations that claimed to have found acoustic evidence of 4 shots in Dealey Plaza, including 1 shot from the grassy knoll. Before that acoustic evidence came in, they were prepared to say there was no conspiracy. There's a draft of their report that says that. Then that evidence sort of brought a majority of the committee around to saying, yeah, we think there was a conspiracy. The trouble is that that supposed acoustic evidence was then peer-reviewed by several different groups, including IBM, which had a scientific center, including a blue ribbon panel from the National Academy of Sciences called the Committee on Ballistic Acoustics, and they basically found out that it was invalid. Even a book that came out this year from a guy named Larry Sabato, he's a political scientist from the University of Virginia, had a top acoustics firm review the evidence and decided this was really bogus. Apparently what we had with some acoustic scientists with a kind of vested interest in vindicating a particular methodology, just pushing it farther than they should. I know science has a particular mystique, but when somebody claims that something is scientific, you really have to ask, how long has this been around? Has it survived peer review? Is it accepted in courts, et cetera? And it turned out that that was very tenuous evidence.
Let's take another caller, Bernie in Elkhorn. Hello, Bernie.
Good morning. I want to recommend a book by a gentleman named James Douglas. It's called JFK and the Unspeakable. And on that cover of that book, it says, he chose peace, they marked him for death. And if JFK had lived, the professor is in error, there would have been a significant difference in the U.S. history. He was looking to get out of Vietnam. He would have gone after the CIA. He wanted to get closer to Russia. He had made some big mistakes. But he had learned that the people in what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex were not acting on the best interest of the country. And that's why they killed him. And here it is 50 years later, and we're hearing the same old nonsense. And I guess when you quote people like Donald Rumsfeld about the absence of evidence, I don't know, you know, I don't have any hope that you're ever going to open your eyes to this.
Bernie, who's they? Who killed him?
The people in the CIA and the military, you know, went after him because he... Now, I have to admit, I've only read a review of this book, and I recently purchased it to put on my reading stack. But the contention is that that Kennedy became an obstacle to what they wanted to do in terms of Vietnam and the Cold War. Kennedy had changed his thinking, and Kennedy was a powerful obstacle that they had to get out of the way.
What's your response to that?
Yeah, yeah. Let me urge readers to Google up James Douglas, which I think is spelled with two S, John McAdams, Washington Decoded, where I review the book. It's a really bad book. It accepts all kinds of witnesses who are, you know, have been debunked and aren't even taken seriously by most conspiracy authors. Douglas sort of admits that Kennedy came into office being pretty hawkish, but somehow he had sort of a road to Damascus experience and became George McGovern or something. There's essentially no evidence of that. Kennedy, up to the day he died, said that it was important that Vietnam not fall to the communist. He told Huntley and Brinkley in an interview that he believed in the domino theory. This was just a few weeks before the assassination. He told Walter Cronkite that it would be a mistake to withdraw from Vietnam, again, just a few weeks before the assassination. Now, an important distinction here. It's possible he wouldn't have gotten embroiled in Vietnam like Lyndon Johnson did. We can't know because push came to shove in 1965. All the documents show that as of the time Kennedy died, there was the hope that American advisors, and Kennedy ramped up the number of those very heavily, and American aid would allow the South Vietnamese to fight off the invasion from the North. It wasn't until later that it became obvious that it was either a large-scale intervention from the U.S. or the communist takeover in the South. So we can't know what Kennedy would have done. We do know that by the time he died, he had not become George McGovern. He had not become a born-again dove.
We have just a minute to go. Our last caller wanted to know if any more evidence might come to light after this generation dies off. Is there anything sealed that's going to be opened anytime?
There are over 1,100, nearly 1,200 documents that are scheduled to be opened in 2017. I think the odds that we'll find anything more than significant are pretty slight. It's possible, but it's been 50 years. I think the evidence we have now, and people have to draw their own conclusions from that evidence, is pretty much the evidence we'll have for the entire history of this republic.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here.
John McAdams, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University, the author of JFK Assassination Logic, How to Think About Claims of Conspiracy. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come, including a talk about all the top stories in the news this week. The Week in Review is coming up after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.